Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls One Planet series. In 2017, Hurricane Irma devastated South Florida and led to a 30% decline in the population of endangered key deers. It's a small subspecies of white-tailed deer that live on 20 to 25 islands in the southern Florida Keys. They are not found anywhere else in the world. Today's guest, investigative journalist Jimmy Tobias, reports that when the hurricane hit, Irma drowned the key deer, slammed them into buildings, and dragged them out to sea, which is a horrible visual. But the population has largely bounced back. These gentle and beautiful animals, though, are threatened by climate change and sea level rise. According to the Center for Biological Science, most of Big Pine Key, the biggest stronghold of the Florida key deer, will be underwater in decades because of sea level rise caused by the climate crisis. The key deer's habitat is increasingly imperiled by more frequent and more intense hurricanes. In addition to habitat loss, the key deer is threatened by New World screwworm, which has killed more than 10% of the entire population in 2016. In a new investigation, Jimmy Tobias reveals that despite this bleak future, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which administers the Endangered Species Act, has been working on proposals in recent years that would strip key deer of its endangered species status, even as the agency's own scientists have highlighted the threat of rising sea levels to the deer's habitat. Jimmy Tobias is an investigative journalist, a contributor at The Nation, a contributing writer at The Guardian, and a 2021 Alicia Patterson Foundation Fellow. His new investigation focuses on why the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been working on proposals that would strip the key deer of its endangered species status. Hi, Jimmy. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for another important story.
Thanks for having me, Rose.
Well, you always introduce us to amazing animals, or at least write a piece that allows us to focus on amazing animals. I had never even heard of the key deer before reading this piece. So why did you decide to focus on key deer?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wasn't too familiar with them either before I started, you know, researching them and going down to visit them in the Keys. But, you know, they're really pretty amazing animals. They're very small, almost like the size of a dog. Sort of miniature deer, very adorable. And yeah, as you said in your intro, they're only found in the Keys. They evolved in the Florida Keys. You know, they were separated from the mainland and evolved into this incredible small form. So yeah, you know, I found them fascinating, and you know, I've been covering the Fish and Wildlife Service, and they are under the protection of the Fish and Wildlife Service because they're listed under the Endangered Species Act. And so, you know, I focused on them because they're federally protected, and I cover, you know, endangered and threatened species primarily.
And it was also amazing to read that they can swim from island to island.
Yeah, they can. They're pretty good swimmers, and yeah, they're just these amazing creatures that, you know, they're pretty habituated to humans now, so you see them very easily, and people will travel from all over the world to come to Big Pine Key and surrounding keys to see these animals because they're so unique.
Wow. Well, I hope you can take some time to go to yourcallradio.org just to see how beautiful these creatures are. And just one more piece of info about these creatures. We got this from the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission website. Key deer numbers fell to less than 50 in the 1940s. Hunting and habitat destruction led to their almost disappearance, but establishment of the National Key Deer Refuge in 1957 helped this Florida-only subspecies survive. And Jimmy, you report this in the piece, and I mentioned this in the intro, but it is such a horrific thing to think about that when Hurricane Irma hit South Florida in 2017, these deer were drowned, they were slammed into buildings, and then they were also dragged out to sea. The good news is that the population largely bounced back, but sadly, here we are, they're threatened by the climate crisis and sea level rise.
Yeah, they're really, I mean, the key deer would be a pretty you know, amazing conservation success story, given their rebound, if it weren't for climate change. And they really are, you know, a poster child of of how the climate crisis is going to threaten species all over the world. You know, they only survive in the Keys, and the Keys are going underwater. And so these animals, you know, they have a very perilous future ahead of them. And, you know, they're not the only ones. There's things like, you know, species like the polar bear and many others. But key deer, this beautiful subspecies are, you know, really right on the front line when it comes to, you know, the dangers of climate change for animals.
You interviewed Nova Silvi, a zoologist who has studied the deer since the 1960s. You always find these people who just dedicate their lives to saving these animals. And they're just amazing people. Does Nova know how many key deer are left at this point?
You know, I think the latest estimates are about 750 individuals or more. You know, that they were higher than 1,000. And then, as you said, the hurricane, you know, they got pretty badly impacted by the hurricane and disease, but they have bounced back. And so, you know, they're not really threatened by, you know, these things. It's really the, you know, the rising sea that's going to be the thing that, you know, endangers their future.
Can you remind us just how important the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is, because they administer the Endangered Species Act, and why that is so important, especially right now?
Yeah, the Fish and Wildlife Service is the, you know, a principal agency that enforces the Endangered Species Act. And the Endangered Species Act, in my view, is maybe our strongest conservation law. It is responsible for protecting a huge number of animals that, you know, otherwise would face, you know, a very bleak future. And so it's absolutely critical as we, you know, the world is facing not only the climate crisis, but also a extinction crisis that threatens, you know, hundreds of thousands of species around the globe. And so the Fish and Wildlife Service is absolutely critical if we're going to really face that challenge. And the Endangered Species Act is right on the, you know, it's an essential tool to prevent extinction and try to, yeah, just to try to prevent the worst from happening in the coming decades.
You connect the plight of the key deer back to the George W. Bush administration. You write that the plight of the key deer is a window into the Fish and Wildlife Service's broader failure to adequately protect endangered species threatened by the climate crisis, most notably an obscure but consequential legal memo from 2008 signed by top Interior Department officials at the end of the George W. Bush administration, effectively absolves the Fish and Wildlife Service and other agencies that declined to regulate greenhouse gas pollution that's harming these animals. So can you just remind us what happened in 2008? Tell us more about that legal memo.
Sure. Yeah. The Endangered Species Act has a lot of very important tools that can be used to protect species. And one of those is a tool that allows the government to basically regulate anything that could seriously jeopardize or harm endangered species, you know, and so they can use this tool to regulate anything with a federal nexus, you know, whether it's being permitted by the federal government or funded by the federal government. They can regulate activities that harm endangered species. And during the Bush administration, a legal memo was signed that basically allowed the Fish and Wildlife Service not to regulate greenhouse gas emissions that threaten endangered species like the key deer or the polar bear. And, you know, major federal programs are huge contributors to our greenhouse gas emission total. The federal oil and gas program, the offshore and the onshore programs, you know, account for a huge percentage of the United States' greenhouse gas emissions. So the Fish and Wildlife Service could use the tools of the Endangered Species Act to regulate those emissions because they're, you know, an obvious threat to endangered species, but they don't because of this memo. And, you know, the memo was just a policy choice by the George W. Bush administration. It's not, you know, it wasn't a law, you know, it wasn't passed into law by Congress. So the Biden administration could reverse that policy if it wanted and start to use the Endangered Species Act to really take a hard look at greenhouse gas emissions and how they harm endangered animals. So far that hasn't happened. The memo has been in place all these years. But, you know, I you know, connected the key deer back to that because really animals like the key deer and the polar bear are threatened because of all the greenhouse gas emissions that we're pumping into the atmosphere. And so under the Endangered Species Act, really the Fish and Wildlife Service could at least try to address that problem and look at these emissions and see what can be done under the Endangered Species Act to maybe reform these programs. You know, the agency does have that authority. And so, you know, it remains to be seen what will happen. But I wanted to kind of put the key deer's problem in this broader political context and policy context.
And you point out that the Obama administration did not rescind this memo.
No, it did not, nor did the Trump administration. And it's still in place today.
Of course, we wouldn't expect the Trump administration, right? Because David Bernhardt mm-hmm. served under the Bush and Trump administrations as the Interior Secretary.
That's right. Yeah.
Can you just explain to us, Jimmy, since the Endangered Species Act is so, so important, it's almost like these animals have to deal with, you know, they're like political footballs. You have Republicans who rescind endangered status, and then sometimes, not always, Democrats will reverse it and implement endangered status. So can you just talk about how that works in on the ground?
Yeah, the Fish and Wildlife Service, you know, can designate a species as endangered or threatened, or, you know, it can remove animals from federal protection if they've recovered. And so, you know, it has that authority. It has to go through a process of scientific evaluation, and it has to use the best available science, and it has to kind of go through an administrative process to make that happen. And so what happened with the Keter is for the last several years, you know, the Fish and Wildlife Service, which came under pressure from the Trump administration to, you know, delist as many species as they could get away with, they initiated a process to basically remove the key deer from the Endangered Species Act. And this went on for, you know, a couple years. And then when they couldn't really justify delisting completely removing protections for the key deer, they tried to downlist it from endangered to threatened, which is a slightly lesser protection. And, you know, what was somewhat disturbing about all that is that even as the agency was trying to remove or water down protections for this animal, you know, their own scientists were circulating, you know, draft papers about how dire the sea level rise situation is going to be for the Keys. And so it really, I mean, it was just really kind of shocking that they would go through all this effort and use their resources and time to try to delist this animal, you know, when the science is very clear that sea level rise is an extremely big problem for these animals and for the entire Florida Keys, really.
And what are the reasons for delisting?
Well, you know, the Trump administration made it a big priority to remove animals from the endangered species list. And as you said, you know, endangered species can be very controversial because when an endangered species lives in your area, there are limits on what can be done because, you know, the law protects these animals from harm. And so, you know, a lot of times powerful economic forces or political forces just want to remove protections as much as possible because they want to, you know, they want to remove the regulatory burdens as they view them from the area in which they live or whatnot. So, you know, it was a trend in the Trump administration that, especially in the Southeastern office where the, you know, that covers the Southeastern United States, they really promoted removing animals or trying to. But obviously, so far in the case of the Keter, they haven't succeeded because the science, I think, is not in their favor when it comes to delisting. I mean, these animals face a pretty bleak future with sea level rise. So it's going to, so they've struggled to get away with removing protection so far.
Right. And one reason would be if there was new development, there would be a lot of lawsuits and probably requirements to determine how these animals would be affected by that development under the Endangered Species Act. And I mean, you were on last February talking about the plight of Florida panthers and how a proposed development funded by big money and special interest could seriously damage its habitat and why the U.S. Fish and Wildlife failed to enforce the Endangered Species Act for the Florida panthers. What about key deer? Are there many developments in these areas of the Keys?
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't get into that as much in this piece, but it's true that Big Pine Key, where the key deer are primarily located in an adjacent island as well, they do have the land there is pretty heavily protected because of the endangered species status of these animals. So it is conceivable that if you know, protections were removed from the Keter, that it would open up some of those islands to more development and make it easier to develop certain areas on these, some of these islands. You know, and so I think, you know, some people I've spoken to do sort of speculate that maybe that was a rationale. I haven't seen any hard evidence for that necessarily. But I think it's fair to say that, you know, the Trump administration especially was just very eager to remove environmental regulatory protections in general. And so, you know, removing animals from the endangered species list is definitely one good way to get away with that or to pursue that. And so, so it's all sort of a piece, I guess. And you know, the key deer, sort of the sad thing is the Fish and Wildlife Service could have spent those years really focused on other important things rather than try to delist this animal that really, you know, I think many people believe deserves continued protection given the future that it faces.
Today, we're speaking with Jimmy Tobias, a contributor at The Nation, a contributing writer at The Guardian, and a 2021 Alicia Patterson Foundation Fellow. And today, we're talking about Jimmy's piece that he wrote for Type Investigations. It also ran in The Guardian, called How the Country's Most Prominent Conservation Agency is Failing to Tackle Climate Change. Newly obtained documents show the Fish and Wildlife Service officials pursued plans to remove protections from an endangered Florida animal, the key deer, despite internal warnings about sea level rise. Jimmy will be with us for just over five more minutes. So if you have any questions for him about the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which administers the Endangered Species Act, and why they do what they do or don't take action when animals like the key deer are in so much trouble, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Jimmy, it's amazing to think about the changes that we are seeing, but the next generation is going to see some major, major changes. You interviewed Chris Berg, a scientist and the South Florida program manager for the Nature Conservancy, who's been studying the impact of sea level rise on the Florida Keys ecosystem for more than 15 years. He said the pines that once stood there have retreated as rising ocean water slowly shrinks the precious freshwater pools that sustains the island's wildlife. And even before the rising ocean fully drowns the key deer's home range, seawater contamination will ruin their drinking holes, whether it's 50 years or 100 years. He said that the island habitat, these deer's, their habitat is probably doomed.
Yeah. And, you know, this internal paper we obtained from the Fish and Wildlife Service, I mean, their own scientists using data from government sources and other places, you know, they're saying that Key West, you know, where they kind of gauge these things, Key West itself could see between 3 and 9 feet of sea level rise by 2100. And, you know, most of these islands are much lower than that, or at least the large majority of these islands are much lower than you know, 5 feet. Yeah. And so, you know, the Keys are, I think they're in, you know, they're in pretty big trouble when it comes to their future. And so these animals are really going to struggle. It's unclear really what can be done unless we, you know, it is just unclear. And so, you know, it's, I think, imperative, many people believe, to continue protecting these animals and to try to do as much as we can for them.
In one set of scenarios modeled in the research, low-lying areas in South Florida, like Big Pine Key, would be mostly inundated between 2060 and 2080. That's just 40 or so years away.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the scientists, the Fish and Wildlife Service scientists in this paper wrote, and this is a quote, "The Florida Keys are going underwater due to sea level rise. All sea level rise scenarios agree and depict this to happen." So they're pretty clear, at least in this paper that was circulating throughout the agency, about what the future holds.
What can you tell us about the new director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Martha Williams?
Well, she is a Montanan, and she, you know, she worked in the wildlife issues in Montana for the Democratic governor there, and I think she has a pretty long history there. I mean, I think the jury's really out on the Biden administration, the Fish and Wildlife Service so far. I think it's really hard to say what their record's going to be. Are they going to be aggressive in confronting the mass extinction crisis? Or are they going to kind of continue business as usual, as so many administrations tend to do? I'm not sure. And so I think a lot of people's eyes are on Martha Williams to see what kind of leader she is going to be and what kind of legacy she's going to lead.
And as you write, based on people you have interviewed, the Endangered Species Act could be a very powerful tool in the fight against the climate crisis. Under Section 7, the Fish and Wildlife Service has the authority to review projects undertaken, funded, or permitted by the federal government if they're likely to harm a protected species. This is really important, and this really hasn't come up in many of the shows we've done before. So can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, I mean, many people view this Section 7 of the Endangered Species Act as a really key tool. And it was what I was referring to earlier when we were talking about the memo that was signed during the Bush administration. I mean, the Fish and Wildlife Service has the authority to block projects that are undertaken or funded or permitted by the federal government if they're likely to jeopardize endangered species. And so because so many fossil fuel projects in the United States are either federally permitted or carried out on federal lands or federal waters, the Endangered Species Act applies to these, you know, greenhouse gas emitting projects. And so the Fish and Wildlife Service could take a much more bold approach and use things like Section 7 to really try to regulate some of the greenhouse gas emitting projects that are putting species like the polar bear and the key deer and others at risk. And they really, you know, haven't taken that kind of bold, creative approach. And so, you know, people, a lot of conservationists and scientists are asking the Biden administration to think about using Section 7 and other Endangered Species Act tools to really try to regulate some of these greenhouse gas emitting projects. And so it's a big question whether they're going to, you know, take them up on it. It would be a very big undertaking. It would be a very big challenge. And so far, past administrations have not been eager to do that. You know, they haven't been eager to use the Endangered Species Act in that way. In fact, most administrations kind of watered down the Endangered Species Act. So, you know, it's definitely an open question whether the ESA is going to be used in that way. But the Biden administration, you know, they haven't had as much success tackling climate change so far. So maybe they'll have to turn to some of these laws that are already on the books to address the crisis that's coming.
You quoted Dr. Stephen Amstrup, a signatory on conservationist letter to President Biden, who is a chief scientist for Polar Bears International. Dr. Amstrup said the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service should rescind the Bernhardt memo and, as the Endangered Species Act requires, start addressing the existential threat greenhouse gas pollution poses to plant and animal species across all habitats. In response to questions about its use of the memo, the Fish and Wildlife Service said, quote, "The current state of the science is such that we cannot currently establish a causal connection to a tie to particular greenhouse gas emitting projects, to measurable consequences, to specific species or critical habitats," end quote. But Dr. Amstrup disputed that rationale. So what did he say? He says that it is possible to measure the climate impact of specific fossil fuel projects on imperiled species.
Yeah, I mean, he I don't want to speak for him because he, I know he has been doing some research on this, and so he, you know, he's a good person to talk to because he's done a lot of work on polar bears and the impact of greenhouse gas emissions on polar bears and the ice that they need to survive these bears. But he contends that, in fact, you can kind of take a look at the data and parse sort of the impact from large emitting projects and kind of see how they impact certain species. And so he's been doing work on that front. And, you know, the science has come a long way since the Bernhardt memo was signed during the Bush administration. And so I think a lot of conservationists and scientists who have written a letter to Biden, the Biden administration, asking them to rescind the Bernhardt memo and use the Endangered Species Act to regulate some greenhouse gas emitting projects. I mean, they contend that the science is advanced enough to really, you know, find a way to do that. And so, yeah.
A last question, Jimmy. Under the Biden administration, the Interior Department is now led by Deb Haaland. You have done so much reporting on Interior, the Fish and Wildlife Service. What has changed really so far under the Biden administration, especially when it comes to the animals that you write about and the importance of protections?
Well, I mean, you know, they have reversed a lot of the Trump policies that really sought to water down and weaken the Endangered Species Act. So, you know, it seems like they're kind of taking us back to a little bit to like pre-Trump policies. The question I think is, you know, will they be bold? Will they really try to tackle the extinction crisis and the climate crisis at the Interior Department? Because the Interior Department really has an enormous amount of power when it comes to these two issues. You know, I think, as I said, and as I kind of keep saying, I think the jury's still out. I really think the jury's still out. And anyone who cares about these issues, you know, I think it's important to make one's voice heard, because there's a lot of pressure out there not to do the right thing. And so I think it'll be interesting to see. It'll just be interesting to see what comes of this Interior Department.
Well, Jimmy, again, thank you for your great reporting. Thanks for introducing us to these amazing animals. And thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jimmy Tobias is a contributor at The Nation, a contributing writer at The Guardian, and a 2021 Alicia Patterson Foundation Fellow. You can find his piece, How the Country's Most Prominent Conservation Agency is Failing to Tackle Climate Change, at yourcallradio.org. Coming up after a break, we'll talk about what's driving record-breaking heat wave temperatures in Antarctica. This is Your Calls One Planet series. We'll be back after this.